Sometimes you just got to begin to chase a dream that is bigger than you. Sometimes when it seems like you're so far behind, you'll never catch up. You got to get up on your feet. You can't wait on other people to be what you've been called to be.
Hello and welcome to the Ugly Daughter Podcast. This is Julia Legend. Today I have an exceptional and an incredibly knowledgeable guest for you. His name is Dave Elliott. He is a human behavior specialist, peak performance coach, business consultant, and a neurostrategist, and also an author. Hello, Dave, and welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
You're welcome. Dave, can you please tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure, absolutely. I am a coach. I started my business about 8 years ago. I left my corporate job and began coaching. I specialize in the area of relationships, and it's all about helping people figure out where they are, where they want to be, and then help close the gap so that they can actually achieve that which they want to bring into reality, I guess, essentially. I love what I do, and I work with people all over the world, so it's phenomenal. I love it.
Yeah. Dave, what are some of the most destructive human behaviors?
Wow, that's a great question. There's hard to know where to start. I think sometimes, when I'm coming from the specific area of relationships, it's really about, you know, understanding the relationship is a place where you come to give rather than take. And I find that there's a lot of people that come to relationship looking to get something rather than to give something. And so a lot of times they're living in the world of they overvalue significance. So they want to feel significant to someone else, and they really don't understand that significance really is kind of an inside game.
Yeah.
So what that means is you need to feel significant and know your own value before you can come to a relationship and interact with other people really effectively. And then I find that a lot of times people overvalue certainty and having to know exactly how things are going to go and be all about, you know, being comfortable. But the truth of the matter is both of those things are really, they're inside jobs, essentially. You know, your own certainty comes from within, knowing who you are and how you're going to show up no matter what happens.
Yeah.
And your significance comes from inside, too. It's knowing who you are, you know, independent of someone else's good opinion of you. And so, you know, if you give someone the ability to make you feel like $1 million because they think you're great, you also inadvertently give them the ability to make you feel terrible if they change that opinion quickly and without warning.
Yeah. How much is it affected by genetic versus cultural and environment influences, Dave? Because some of our behavior, it's somehow, it could be developed when we were really young.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of my work with my clients is really sort of uncovering and understanding basically unhealed wounds is really what a lot of times what we're working with. And it's about understanding, you know, it is environmental. It's about how you were raised. Pretty much your entire worldview, whether it's a wonderful world or a terrible world, whether it's a good, where the good things happen, terrible things happen, your expectations are pretty much set in your first, say, 7 years of life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, once that's conditioned into you, and those can be difficult things to change. And, and quite frankly, you know, kids come into the world and they're rather myopic. They think the world revolves around them. And ideally, I guess in some manner it should, but not everybody gets really well-prepared and wonderful stewards for their development in their early years. Meaning we have parents who are, they don't have a manual. They're doing the very best they can. We think, and quite frankly, sometimes they're not. So it creates certain challenges that show up later in life. And a good part of what I do is helping other people understand. One of the things that I work with is something called imago. And imago is understanding that, you know, we get these wounds in early childhood. And then the main way that we heal those wounds is through our interactions and relationships with other people who re-trigger those wounds from another perspective. And sometimes we recognize it and know what it is. Sometimes we're totally oblivious to it. But if you can understand it, it's really, you're not being punished. It's really an opportunity to heal it. And so that's what I help my clients understand and realize, because most people don't even understand how that works or what it is. But when you do understand, and you sort of have a guide for that process, it's really effective. And you could do a lot of healing work, compress years into hours, or really kind of do a lot of healing work around the things that need to be resolved and healed.
Yeah. how much is truth is in that, and how is it just a convenience excuse, a cop out to run away from responsibility, Dave? Because I personally came from a very highly dysfunctional family, but I don't allow my past to influence the decision that I make for my future. Do you know what I mean?
I do, absolutely. And I know a little bit about your story, and I think what I do know is pretty remarkable. And I guess the other thing I can say too is, you know, the past does not predict the future, and unless you live there. And so I would also say that some of the people in this world who are doing the most work as far as like enlightened work or healing people, you know, people like, you know, Wayne Dyer, Tony Robbins, who is one of my mentors, Oprah Winfrey, people of that nature, if you look back into their childhood, from my understanding and my what I've learned along the way, is they came from some of the most profoundly, you know, dysfunctional backgrounds. And that literally is what gives them the drive to want to change or a necessary need. So if you grow up in this beautiful, you know, idyllic, wonderful world where everything goes your way and there's no challenge, you're probably not going to be someone who is going to, you know, be driven to change the world and be a powerful force for healing, because you wouldn't really have an experience of it. And so it's one of those things where the void creates the mission. Sometimes it's what you perceive was missing becomes what drives you. And for instance, I got into this work in the area of relationships specifically because it was one of my challenging areas. I got divorced in my first marriage, and I realized that there were some areas where I wasn't really performing at the level that I wanted to perform, and I didn't want that painful situation ever happen again. So it became a kind of a mission to go and learn from the best of the best and figure out what I needed to know so that I didn't have to repeat it, because I really didn't want to repeat it. It was painful enough the first time, so I wanted to learn from it. And I'm just really pleased to say that I found some wonderful mentors and role models and, you know, really educated people, and I learned a ton that I didn't really learn from my parents necessarily, because they're just two people doing the best they could. They didn't have training from the world's leading experts. They were just two people trying to get along. So I learned what I learned by the example I was shown, but I needed more than just that, I think, to ultimately be successful. And that's why I pursued this path. And it's just been wonderful. I love it. I feel like I've discovered my mission, and I love it. I get to do it every day, and it makes a profound difference for me.
Yeah, that's good to know. Dave, we all seem to be an expert of identifying the cause of other people's problem. Why is it so easy for us to find solution for others and not for ourselves?
Wow, that's a great question too.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I think it really comes down to having some emotional distance. I think sometimes when you're in it, it's kind of like it's like the fog of war. And when you're under pressure, and you know, we don't always think clearly when we're under pressure, or we're triggered, or we're emotionally feeling, you know, vulnerable or attacked. Yeah. We sometimes go into our survival mode, and we don't do our best thinking when we're in survival mode or fight or flight. So when you're hearing about someone else's challenge, you're not emotionally invested in it one way or another. So you're able to bring a greater level of, you know, reason and logic and compassion and kindness, because no one's insulting you or no one's taking away anything from you. So I just think that we are able to bring, I guess, some of our best angels into someone else's kind of issue. And I think people do feel really good when they help someone else out. And I think there are a lot of people who have like a servant's heart, and it feels really good to make a profound difference for others. I find it's one of the great game changers in life, I think.
Yeah.
So I think we're just more resourceful when it's not about us.
Yeah. So what do you suggest we do when we find ourselves in a negative mindset or not thinking clearly?
That's basically a time when it's really important to manage your state and change your focus, essentially. And rather than focus on, oh my God, I can't believe they said that, and what does this mean, and how could they possibly think that, and going into the what I call, you know, sort of throwing yourself down the stairs and coming up with all these terrible thoughts, one even worse than the last one. It's basically like, what am I really committed to? How do I want to show up here? Taking a listen to what the other person is requesting or needing or wanting. And if you can come from a place of getting out of you and a need to be right, and listen to their viewpoint and what they're really asking for, and sometimes listen to beneath what they're asking for and understand what they really want behind it. You know, the reality is, I think all people want essentially the same thing. We all want to be seen, appreciated, respected, and loved.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, wow, that's not so much to ask. And so it's about getting to a resourceful place. And at that point, if you can make that leap that, you know, everyone just wants to be seen, heard, appreciated, loved, and respected, that's probably not a whole lot to ask, as long as someone's not doing something that's, you know, outrageous and harmful. So if two people can bring their best selves to the table and sort of negotiate an agreement with the understanding that this person that I'm in a relationship with, or this person that I'm having a disagreement with, you know, everyone deserves to be loved and appreciated the way they want to be appreciated. And so I think that's a huge game changer when you can just sort of understand that and show up from that perspective. Like, how do we solve it? You know, always asking the better question. It's like, it's not how dare they do that, or it's about, well, how can we both get what we need in order to be successful? And how do we create a win-win? I think that's the art of it, is a win-win where both sides are really, really happy that they're getting what they need and someone's not being taken advantage of, and both, it's a win-win. That's really the bottom line.
Yeah. I've seen, witnessed this a lot, Dave. You know, you have two people madly in love, and they lived with each other for a few years, and then they fall out of love, and then they take their relationship for granted. And whenever something dramatic happens, like the death of a close one, or a health scare, or a close call, they tend to have an initial shock, which causes them to reevaluate their lives, start planning big changes for their lives. But as time goes on, and they just go back to their old thinking and forget all about the plan. Why is that?
Well, you know, I think the premise of your question is, when someone has something that's kind of rocks their identity and who they believe they are, and basically it causes them to ask these profound life-changing questions, you know, like if they have a health scare or there's a death in the family. These are the kinds of moments that in life, you know, we get really clear on what's most important. And then sometimes that can be really painful, but it also, it can be really cathartic in terms of basically gets people, they get a lot clearer on what's most important. Like, for instance, you know, if you have a scary diagnosis about a challenge with your own health, well, that's a great wake-up call for people to take better care of themselves. Or if there's a death in the family or something like that, maybe your belief is, oh, they were far too young and they still had a lot to do. It would sort of, you know, get you clearer. Maybe if it was someone who held a grudge and, you know, something like that, and you realize, wow, I really don't want to live with that. I really want to clean that up. I want to get beyond that. This is not how I want to live. These powerful, cathartic moments like that, it just really gets us down to what's real and what's most important. And we sort of break free of the emotional stuff, have a higher calling on what's most important.
But the changes, though, Dave, they don't really seem to last for too long. I mean, how do you make the lasting change? How do you keep the momentum?
Well, I think it's really, a change is a matter of conditioning it. And again, if you have two parties who are really interested in performing at a deep level, and they're really committed and want to show up at that level so that they're serving one another, then you basically condition that behavior. So both, again, it's about a win-win. If both sides are really being conditioned, that it feels good and they're getting the benefit, the other party's getting the benefit, and no one's, you know, feeling taken advantage of or not getting what they wanted, it makes it really easy for both parties to become way more reasonable and actually over deliver. I find that if you, again, gratitude is a great game changer. If you're with a partner and they just treat you impeccably, you're going to step up your game too, because, you know, it's just out of gratitude and appreciation. We want to, if you value a great relationship with someone, you know, and you have it, you're going to want to do the work to keep it. And that's a lot of what I help people do. I help them get really clear on what they want. And, you know, a lot of times it's just a little bit of either a new awareness about something that's missing, or a new strategy that can shift everything, or, you know, a new skill or something like that. So between those three things, a strategy, awareness, or a skill, usually that's going to make a pretty big difference once we sort of understand what's missing, where the challenge is, where the pressure, and we have leverage to make the change. I find that it makes a big difference when you've got two people who are committed to the outcome for whatever reason, whether they have leverage or whether they have see the positive or negative. They're either being so rewarded that they want to continue it, or they have so much pain by not doing it, they absolutely want to continue it. So it's about finding that leverage.
Yeah. I think I have to send my sister to you because she's been on and off with her partner for nearly a decade now. And they're just repeating the same pattern and the behavior again and again for 10 years. How easy or how hard is it to switch or to make the change, Dave?
You know what the main thing is about it? It's I believe that if people know better, they will do better. And so I find that most people, like in an instance where you describe where, you know, for 10 years, they're unaware of what's the sticking point, what's this really about, what needs to shift to be able to take them both to a level where they're just beyond delighted with one another. And usually there's something missing and it's sort of a two people battling for something that seems to be what the one person needs conflicts with what the other needs. So basically you get down to a needs conflict or a values conflict or some perception of one anyway. And so what I do is I help clear it up and basically get down beneath it. I mean, a lot of times in a long-term relationship like that, it's usually going to be something involving trust or about appreciation or making sure that both people are on the same page and they're understanding one another and they have a fair and deeper understanding. Again, it's not always the presenting issue, like, well, he always does this or she always does that. Sometimes it's looking beneath it. It's not about the behavior. It's about the feeling beneath it or the trust or something like that. There's usually something underneath of it. They're just, well, frankly, you know, not a present to that issue. And if you get down to the real issue and you solve it at the ground level, I mean, all the other power dynamics and all those other things, they just sort of dissolve away and they get solved because they're no longer triggers. And it's, you know, the triggers go on top of the deeper stuff. And most people are fighting about this, that, or the other thing, but it's really not about the real issue.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I know that with her relationship is hugely based on just issue. The thing is, once the person break that just how can you learn to trust again, Dave? I mean, is there particular steps that you can take?
Well, absolutely. Trust can be rebuilt. I mean, it's not easy. You have to have two people who are committed to the process,
yeah.
Two people who are willing or want to do it if they could. And again, a lot of times when I get in there and work with them both, I'm sort of basically taking two sides and walking them both towards the middle. And so when I'm working with two people, a lot of times it's a little bit easier to find the leverage and figure out what's missing and make sure that that gets met. And as long as, again, two people are really kind of meeting their needs,
yeah,
people will step up. But a lot of times the difficulty with trust is once trust is damaged, it gets triggered again and again and again in so many ways, and it makes people kind of tender, and it'll make them, you know, quicker or not try as hard, or, you know, point the finger and say, see, I knew you weren't serious. But having that third party in there who really stands for both of them and says, look, if you want to fix this, we can. And here's what I'm going to need from you. And here's what I'm going to need from you. And it basically puts them both into kind of defining the problem in solvable terms. The reason most people get stuck is they have no idea how to solve it. But if someone else is there and says, well, here, basically all we need to do is this and this, would you be willing to do that? And one person says, yeah. And I said, well, how about you? Would you be willing to do this? And they're like, oh, yeah, well, I could do that. And I'm like, okay, so here's how we're going to do it. And we basically walk it back and we sort of rebuild that trust. And, you know, we give it a little assignments, an action item, and say, okay, so this week you're going to do this, this, and this. And, you know, your partner, you're going to do this and this. And basically now we're solving the issue underneath of the issue. And that's when those other triggers just sort of dissolve because we've handled it at the root.
Yeah. Dave, some of my friends, they don't seem to have the ability to choose the right partners. And they tend to fall in love with the same kind of people similar to their ex-partners or lovers. And they're making the same mistake again and again. So do you have any suggestion or tips to help these people to break out of that unhealthy thought pattern?
Yes, I do. And the first step is recognizing that it is absolutely a pattern. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier about the imago loop. Imago, understanding that people have these wounds from childhood, and the only mechanism for healing that in life is by replicating it from another perspective. And then you have a chance to heal it when someone triggers that original wound from your early childhood. And most people struggle with it because they're not conscious that imago is even a thing, or that it's there to serve them, not punish them. People think, oh, I keep meeting the same, you know, I have terrible taste in men or women, and why I keep meeting, you know, players, or I keep meeting liars, or I keep meeting cheats, or I keep meeting whatever it is, fill in the blank. And the truth is, the goal is to understand, like, why are you attracting it? What is it that needs to be healed? And what's that thing? And it really is understanding that it's there to serve you. It's not there to punish you again and again. So my belief is, if you're being presented with a lesson, get the lesson as soon as you can. Otherwise, you'll have to just continue repeating it.
Yeah. So Dave, you have recently published a book called The Catch Your Match Formula. What is it about?
Oh, thanks for asking about that. So The Catch Your Match Formula is a book that I wrote. I started to realize that there are a lot of people out there trying online dating, and the research shows that basically 20% of people get the result they want, meaning they find a relationship, they're dating people, they get in a relationship, they get engaged, or they get married. But that leaves 80% of people who are struggling. And I started to realize, you know, there's a reason why. And I used to be in the advertising business. I was a copywriter, and I really understand advertising and how to create an impression. And most people tend to write the same kind of ineffective, myopic, self-serving dating profiles, like, this is who I am, this is what you need to be, and it's all me, 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 me. Whereas my book helps to, it basically creates a formula. It's about, how do you write a great, compelling ad? How do you get really clear on what is it that you bring to the table? What do you offer someone? And why should you, how do you get their attention? How do you, curiosity and intrigue? How do you get them to click on you and to review your profile? And how do you put, like, little intriguing tidbits throughout your copy that speaks to them and says, oh my gosh, he sounds incredible, or she sounds amazing. I really want to know who this person is. And they have enough to click and say, hey, I loved your profile, I'd love to meet you. So that's a very specific job. And the reason why 80% of people are not successful is because they don't know what they bring to the table. They yeah. don't know how to present it in a compelling way. They don't know how to, you know, inspire someone to action, like, you know, actually getting off their bottom and actually hitting click and responding and saying, hey, I loved your profile, I'd love to meet you. So, you know, I realized it's a formula, and I basically created that, and I'm really proud. I've gotten some beautiful compliments. I've got some people who are already in a very short time, the book's only about just over a year old since it came out, and I've got some people who are already, you know, sort of on the short track to engagement and marriage, and people who are in a really, really good place, and I'm just so proud. They're all 5-star reviews, and it's making a profound difference. And I think writing a dating profile is, it's not common practice. Not everyone knows how to do it. Yeah. And I think there's just a few great tips that allow people to say, oh, wow, that's how to do it. Yeah. And so that's why I created that formula. And it's really about sort of fill in the blanks and get really clear about who you are and what you bring to the table. And that's valuable for anybody, you know, knowing your own value. And that's, I think, the biggest, you know, whether you're interviewing for a job, you know, in a totally other category of life, or you're in a relationship, you need to know your value, and you need to show up in a way that makes you proud and makes you feel good. So I think it serves people in a lot of great ways by just having that clarity about who they are, and then knowing how to communicate and develop rapport with people easily and elegantly at a really deep level, be understood and understand them. So some great tips in the book. I think it's a pretty easy read. And like I said, just had some really great comments and testimonials, some successful pairings with people who've met incredible partners.
Yeah. Sounds wonderful, Dave. In the book, do you have any tips to kind of like how to catch the liar and the con artist on the internet too?
Yeah, I do, sort of. I talk about one of the things that I put in there is about, again, being really clear and knowing what you're looking for. And I have a thing where I talk about using a velvet rope. And so a velvet rope, if you think about it, is sort of like a velvet rope is used to either create a crowd or control a crowd. And so I use a velvet rope as far as I talk all about, here's what I want, here's who I am, here's what I bring to the table. And oh, by the way, here's one thing I'm really clear that I don't want, and it's this. This one thing. It's like, you know, 9/10 of it is really, really positive. And then there's one thing that's a deal breaker. And this is the one thing I don't want. And it's not, foolproof. I mean, there are still people who might try to test it. But when you have that kind of, again, it just says, wow, I know who I am. I know what I'm about. I'm mostly positive, but here's this one thing. I've been there, done that. Don't need to ever experience it again. And it just positions you as really confident, knowing who you are and just being focused and driven. And a lot of times it's going to be enough to keep, you know, if some people are just like, ah, you know what, they're going to be wise to me. It's not going to be worth the trouble. So it'll keep them away. But when you understand imago too, you're going to attract some people. And again, your job is to get the lesson. And once you get the lesson, you won't attract those people anymore. Energetically, your vibration will be different. And certain people with those issues, like, you know, a narcissist or something like that, they won't be attracted to you because you won't give them what it is they seek, because you're wise to them and you'll see what they're bringing to the table. When you understand how it works and you understand how you've been a victim before and how you won't ever be a victim again, the whole thing just resolves itself. A narcissist or someone like that will go on to an easier victim because you're wise to them.
So before we go, Dave, what advice do you have for our lonely listeners today?
Well, the short answer is I recommend they buy my book.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's a bit of a joke. And the truth of the matter is, one of the reasons that I say that specifically is, in a dating relationship, if you really want to attract someone in, one of the most powerful ways that you will attract someone in is if you are confident, you come from a good place. And my book is full of exercises that help you understand what are the benefits and what are the experiences and the traits that you bring to the table and what do you offer. And I think a lot of people lose sight of that. They lose sight of their greatness. And, you know, I guess my one gift as a coach, I have many, but the one gift that I love to give people is I see the greatness in them even when they themselves don't see it. And I kind of point it out and they say, wait a minute, you see that in me? And I say, absolutely. I see this in you and I see this and this and this. And they're like, oh, wow. They sort of discount it in themselves. And so I think when you show up on a date and you feel really good and you know that you bring value to the table and you're really clear, you'll just have a really good date. Even if you're just meeting someone and becomes just, you know, a 30-minute coffee date, or it's the first night of the rest of your lives together, there's a lot of stuff that I teach in the book that helps make sure that you really become artful at connecting and having rapport with people wherever you meet them. And then at some point, you're going to meet the right person at the right time, and all these skills are going to fall right into place. And, you know, magic happens when you meet someone who is really, they bring to the table what you're looking for, you offer something great for them, and it really just works. And, you know, it's like anything, you know, repetition gets you into a good place. So if someone's lonely, there are some great tools and skills on how to understand what's beneath it, but also get to a place where you're bringing some real value to the table.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Day. Really appreciate it, and I hope you have a great afternoon.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Bye.
Bye.
That's all for today. Thank you for listening. I hope to see you all again next week. Bye for now.